Okay, thanks. I want to thank the organizers for inviting me. I'm going to talk about some work we've been doing together with Shura Grossberg and Yuichi Wakamoto. And this has to do with understanding population dynamics from the perspective of individual lineages. So I want to start by showing some experiments we've been doing together with Yuichi. And these are experiments where we're looking at continuously dividing populations of E. coli that are being grown in microfluidic channels. And the channels are sufficiently wide that you can observe multiple cells in the channel, and eventually you get a small population of continuously dividing cells. And we can observe many, many such populations because we make multiple channels. And you can simultaneously obtain data on multiple populations. And additionally, you can fluctuate the environment in these experiments. So these cells are going under a membrane, which means that you can flow different nutrients, different antibiotics, and you can fluctuate the environment in a very controlled way, and at the same time see how this affects cell division rates. And if you have fluorescent markers, you could also observe how this affects gene expression. So today, for this talk, we're only going to look at cell divisions. So this is, for example, one movie you obtain from one of these channels. And from this movie, you can extract a lineage tree for the population. So you can follow every single cell, and over the time course of the experiment, extract back exactly all the lineage relationships that occurred during that movie. And so what you're seeing here is a single population. Each time you see a cell division here, you see the splitting into two cells. So how can we understand this growth in the simplest possible way? And we'll see where we may need to make modifications. So the simplest possible model for this type of population is one in which you have, it's called the Bellman-Harris process. And it's one in which you have certain statistics, better one, okay, where you have certain statistics for the lifespan distribution. So this is in the Bellman-Harris process called lifespan. In this case, it's simply the cell division cycle. And this model is more general than bacteria, so you can make multiple offsprings at every single division with some distribution. So for bacteria, we simply say that every time you split, you make two offspring. And over long time, or over some sufficiently long time, the prediction of the model is that the distribution of ages in the population is going to reach some equilibrium. In this case, lifespan is time between divisions. That's correct. And in this model, at every single division, both of the offspring that are formed, both of the cells that are formed after the division, go back to the age zero. Okay, so that's the assumption of this Bellman-Harris model. Eventually, you're going to reach some equilibrium distribution, and you can compute this distribution in the Bellman-Harris process, and it takes this form. It's going to be proportional to this integral here, and once you've reached that distribution, the growth rate of the population is going to reach a constant value, which is called Malthusian parameter. And that parameter, lambda, is the growth rate of the population, is given by solution to this equation. I'll call this a Malthus equation. And this quantity here is the average number of offspring formed at every single division, which in bacteria would just be 2. G is the lifespan distribution, and psi is the equilibrium distribution of ages in the population. So if I pick a single time here, and I ask how long is every cell since its last cell division, that's the cell cycle age of the cell, and that's this psi. So what we can do is... It will be different, yes. So there's a simple way to derive these. So we could easily derive this form of C, which I'm not going to go through this. It's a pretty simple calculation. So from this data, we can take time slices, and we can average these over this experiment. And we can obtain, so before we do that, we can first ask an even simpler question. What is simply the life cycle distribution, the cell cycle distribution here? And so in, you're seeing data here from two different conditions. This is the cell division time, and this is the fit to this distribution. And so essentially what we're doing is just measuring g of tau in this experiment. And then from that g of tau, and going back to the previous slide, we can predict this equilibrium distribution. So we fit this, and now we obtain the theoretical prediction for the age distribution in the experiment. And then, of course, we go back to the data and we can ask how well does that fit the actual age distribution.
Any of your bacteria seem to die.
They're simply flowing out of the channel. So every time you see a lineage ends, it's just flowing out of the channel. So there's no death in this case. This is the usual problem, is how do you keep the population size constant so it doesn't exponentially grow? In our case, we have flow. And what that means is that the cells inside the device are going to eventually reach some equilibrium, which we're going to try to measure. Yeah. So what you see is that this is the theoretical prediction from the cell cycle distribution. This is the experimental data, which is only up to 4 hours here. So now we're extending these experiments for much longer times and see how long it takes to reach equilibrium in these experiments. Do you reach equilibrium? And once you're at equilibrium, do you describe it properly? Is it properly described by this, or is this kink here somehow important? So that's the kind of experiments we have. So what I want to bring up now is there's kind of what are the problems and open questions from this kind of data. So the first problem is that this model neglects any age-dependent growth. So there's been quite a lot of recent work on aging in bacteria, and several groups have been actively working on this. And the question is whether the cells age. And so at a certain, given how long it has been since the last cell division, or given if you track in E. coli different poles of cells, how much time has been since the initial cell, the growth rate, the question is, does the growth rate slow down? So there may be aging. And so this model here simply neglected age-dependent growth, and so we can think of this as some null hypothesis for aging. So the other thing that was neglected in this analysis was the lineage structure. So we have these very nice lineages, but we basically don't use most of that information. So my question is, are we throwing away some useful information by using only the bulk population statistics like growth rates or even age distributions in the populations? We're not really taking advantage potentially of full lineages. So first, I address the first question. There's models, there's many different ways you can put an age dependence into these models. And probably the first work on this is from Fisher and Lotka. And I call this the classic aging process. And in this process, keep in mind that a lot of these processes don't only apply to bacteria and have only recently actually been looked at in bacteria or even thought of in bacteria. So this is really thinking of from populations and demography. That's where these models come from. So in the classic aging process, birth events occur with a rate B of X, where X is the age. X will always be the age in this talk. And in this model, every single time there's a birth event, it produces a single offspring. So it produces one offspring, but the mother continues to age. So the offspring goes back, is at age zero, and the mother continues to age. And then in this model, you also have the possibility of having death rates. And so you can put in death rate in different ways. Here I'll indicate it as a survival probability. So L of X is the probability that a cell will survive to the age X. Okay, so that's the classic aging process. You can also think of other processes. For example, you can imagine a process where you have a whole offspring distribution. So you can have birth events which occur with some rate. So the events occur with this rate, kind of reproductive events. But then each time there's an event at a particular age, once it occurs, it can produce a different number of offspring, and you might have a whole probability distribution BZ of X, which tells you the probabilities of having different numbers of offspring if you reproduced at that age. And from that, the average here I'm going to indicate is B of X. So that would be the mean number of offspring that you form at any age in this model. So let's consider now, can we understand growth of a population in terms of lineages? And I'd like to just take a very basic example to illustrate this. So let's take this offspring distribution model, but let's take a big simplification of it, which is that the birth rate itself will have constant in time. So there, at any age, the cell has a constant probability of undergoing a birth event. However, depending on the age at which it actually occurs, it's going to have some mean offspring, which we'll say is Gaussian. So we'll take a Gaussian mean offspring distribution, which will depend on age. And so this Gaussian, we'll say, is at a mean of tau star. So that's the age at which you make the maximal possible offspring on average. And that will be given by B max. And there's some width associated with this distribution. So let's ask, how does the population's lineages look in this kind of model? So we can do some simple, very simple back of the envelope estimate. And so we can ask, well, what if the lineages, imagine that the lineages that dominate in the populations are the ones which reproduce always at the time tau star. So these are the lineages, maybe these are the fastest growing lineages, which always produce the biggest number of offspring. So you can then estimate how fast this lineage grows. Let's call that lambda zero. And it will simply be the log of the number of offspring divided by the tau star, which is when it divided. Now, you can also go back and compute the real Malthusian growth rate in this model, which I'm not showing, but it's given by that integral equation. And when you do this, you find that this lineage that I just mentioned, the one that always reproduces the optimal at this tau star, will actually grow slower than the population. So this is not the solution. This is not the dominating lineages in the population. So then you can think, well, maybe the population's lineages are doing something more sophisticated. So imagine that instead of always dividing at age tau star, they divide at a slightly younger age. So they make fewer offspring. But because they divide at a slightly younger age, they have more cell division events. And so you can write that down. And you can, in fact, optimize. And you can ask, well, what's the best tau at which they should divide that'll optimize their growth rate? And when you do this, you'll find that you obtain some other lambda, and it's bigger than this lineage, but it's still smaller than what the population does. So that means the population actually does something more sophisticated than either of these lineages. So we asked, what is this population actually doing? And it turns out that the population has some optimal balance between maintaining a large collection of distinct lineages and balancing that against the actual productivity of any one of those lineages. So instead of just having a single type of lineage, which is always deterministically dividing a certain age, it maintains a diversity of different lineages, and each one of these has a certain number of offspring. It turns out that the optimal lineages, the ones that dominate the population, all have the same expected number of offspring. We'll see that in a second. So towards the end of the talk, I'll show how you obtain this. And you can actually show in this example that if you look at how often lineage rejuvenates and jumps back to age zero, it's actually Gaussian. It'll have a Gaussian distribution of these intervals. But that Gaussian will be shifted down to a value which is smaller than this. And it'll maintain a diverse population of lineages. So to understand to now ask, how do you actually obtain this kind of result? So we have to look at the population, this age structured population, in a lineage perspective. So let's consider a single lineage here, and I'm going to discuss this now for something like the classic aging process, where the mother cell continues to age, but the offspring goes back to age zero. So if you follow this lineage, what you'll see is there's cell divisions along the lineage. There's another cell division. And when the circle is like this, and there's a new lineage emerging from it, or let's not call it lineage, just a new line emerging from it, it means that this lineage has passed from the mother to the daughter. And the daughter now is the mother, continues to age. Here it reproduces, but the lineage follows the mother. It's okay. So every time the circle looks like this, you have a rejuvenation event, and this here is not a rejuvenation event. So lineages have this type of form. I call these on-lineage births and off-lineage births. So this depends on the model, but it depends on the system. But any organism can be a mother. And so along the lineage, these are simply individuals, and I'm just calling them a mother when they've divided, and I'm saying that the guy that is older is what was called the mother at this division, and the other guy was the offspring, but let's just call them individuals. So now if you look at the age, if you look at the age along the lineage, so the lineage is, I'm going to call sigma from now on. If you look at the age along the lineage as a function of time, you see that along this particular lineage, the age goes up, but then the lineage moved to a new individual, so the age goes back to zero. And then the lineage continues to age here, and this event does not return you to zero, only this one, so you jump back to zero. So that's what the kind of function looks like for age along lineages. Okay, so what I want to do now is just say that we can describe a whole collection of models, Bellman-Harris model, aging, classic aging model, many, many different types of models of aging using a single formulation. And what that means is that the model comes in here. The model tells you the expected number of cells that have a given age x prime that are produced in a single time step from a cell which was at the age x. And if you know this function, then if you know your model, you can specify this function for any one of these models. And the quantity that we typically look at is the expected number of cells having a certain age at time t. And the dynamics of that quantity is given by this, simply propagating from the population distribution at age x, propagating to the next age x prime, to the next time step t. So that's the dynamics. So this is general. And this gives you a path integral structure because if you propagate this, you're going to obtain a multiplication of these transfer operators. So for any single lineage at the end, you can just propagate how often it jumps from one age to the next along the lineage. And you'll obtain the expected number of cells that have a given lineage at the end of the day. And for that, that's for a specific lineage that's given. And this is here is this entire quantity we'll summarize. We'll call this the statistical weight of the lineage. And so you see that you can write this equation here as a path integral where you've now summed over all possible lineages. You've summed the statistical weight over all possible lineages. So what this is for exponentially growing, right? Now if you constrain population size, what you have to remember is that you're still allowing cells to continuously divide. So I would say this is for continuously dividing populations. Okay. Where you don't have density dependence. Right. I'm sorry? That's if you want to have some density dependence. Yes, if you want to have this turn around and eventually reach some stationary phase, then you would need to introduce such interaction. But for example, in our experiments, all we do is we have a flow out of the channels, and therefore everything remains in nice exponential phase. Yeah. So now we look at these lineages, and we ask, let's look at the lineage structure here. And what does it take to actually compute the statistical weight? So we have a lineage, and if you see that what's entering the statistical weight are the transitions from one age to the next. And so it turns out, and you can see this from this expression, that the statistical weight will only depend on the frequencies of the different transitions along the lineage. So in other words, you may know how many times the lineage ages, how often you age from age X to the next age, and you know how often you go from a certain age back to zero. So if you know the frequency of different aging events and different rejuvenation events, you can actually obtain this statistical weight. So what I'd like to say now is that, so what quantity governs those transitions? And the quantity that governs them is what I'm going to call the lineage age distribution. So what you're going to do is you're going to just follow the age along the lineage and ask what is the probability distribution of that age along the lineage. And that's what I'm going to call rho of x. So that's the distribution of ages if I follow the lineage backwards. And if I know this, then I certainly know how often an aging event from x to x plus delta t has happened in my lineage. And it turns out you can actually, from this, you can actually compute also the interval distribution, so the distribution of rejuvenation events along the lineage, how often they jump back to zero. There's a simple relationship between these two quantities. So in other words, if you know the lineage age distribution, you basically know everything. You know the statistical weight of the lineage. So for the remainder of the talk, I'll use these interchangeably. I'm going to express everything, I'm going to talk about everything in terms of lineage age distributions, but I can go back and forth between these two. So the nice thing now is that instead of summing over all explicit lineages, we can use this, and because the statistical weight depends only on the age distribution along the lineage, we can switch over to summing over all possible lineage age distributions. Well, when we do this, we have to keep in track of how many lineages map to any given age distribution. So any given distribution of age along the lineages may have many, many lineages which have exactly the same age distribution. So what we need to do is count that number. And so that's the factor I'm expressing here as an exponential of an entropy. So what I'm calling lineage entropy counts how many lineages are represented by every single age distribution that I fix. So that quantity we'll explain in a second how we can actually calculate. And then this quantity is the statistical weight, which we said only depends on the lineage age distribution. And this quantity, the intuitive meaning, is that it counts how many individuals in the population are expected to have a specific lineage at the end of the experiment. So what you see is that these two quantities basically govern the whole story here. And then the important point is that they are extensive in the total length of the lineage. So entropy is certainly going to be extensive, and the statistical weight will also be extensive because this is a multiplicative process. So the statistical weight is the log, so this lineage fitness is the log of the statistical weight because it's a multiplicative process, it'll also be extensive. So what that means is that this whole term here is going to grow with a rate which is given by this kind of summation of these two, and the rate is the per unit time growth of this kind of lineage. And so you see from this that, in fact, the lineages that will dominate the populations are the ones which maximize this functional. And this is where we obtain a variational principle for the growth of populations when you look at them from the lineage perspective. So let me just explain what I mean by this. This here is the growth rate. And what we've shown is that the particular type of lineage which grows fastest, which will have the fastest growth rate, is one which maximizes this functional. And we're going to call that the optimal lineage age distribution. So now we have this principle. And what it tells us is that, well, this will be the growth rate of the entire population. And so this should give us back the Malthusian parameter in all of these models. Okay, so now let's return for a moment to the basic example we started with and say what kind of interpretation does this give us back. So in the two examples that I kind of constructed, these naive back of the envelope estimates, you saw that there were lineages which basically were deterministic. So a single type of lineage we were estimating all our results for. In fact, what we showed now is that the lineage composition itself is optimizing a trade-off. And it optimizes a trade-off which is kind of at the opposite of this extreme. This is the extreme of the examples which we tried to construct. So the extreme examples were that there was no lineage diversity, and the population used only a single lineage. And that lineage, we took it to give it the maximal possible offspring. But what the population actually does is it maintains a whole diversity of optimal lineages. All of these lineages have exactly the same age distribution, and all these lineages have the same number of expected offspring, but there's just lots of them. So that's how the population actually does evolve. Okay, so now I wanted to give, how would you actually use this in any given case? How do you use this variational principle? So I thought I'd give this simple user's guide. So what you do is, in any given model, you need to know a single quantity, which is the reproductive function. And you saw that in each one of the models I outlined until now, there were multiple functions involved. But ultimately, the only thing that enters and that governs how the lineages evolve in time is a single quantity, which is the reproductive function. And that tells you the rate of producing offspring at a given age after survival, after taking averages over distributions, et cetera. So basically, it's a kind of net summary quantity. And I can show you how it looks for the classic aging process. It looks like B of x, which is the birth rate at age x, times the survival probability. For the Bellman-Harris process, it looks like the interval distribution, the individual the lifespan distribution times the average number of offspring. And for the example model that we gave, it's the birth rate times the average number of offspring at a certain age. Now, I want to just stress that these models, for example, Bellman-Harris is quite different from classic aging because in Bellman-Harris, both of the offspring go back to zero at every single cell division. Whereas in classic aging, one mother continues to age and the offspring is the one that starts at zero. So these are different, these are kind of, naively you would think these are very different models. But if you write them in terms of this reproductive function, you obtain exactly the same formulation when you look at everything in terms of lineages. So for example, how would you use this for any given case? First, you calculate the lineage fitness, which is the statistical weight. And the statistical weight you can show is actually how often you have a certain rejuvenation event, which is this what I've called the reproduction interval distribution in the lineage, G tilde. And then the log of this reproductive function is the statistical weight that you accumulate each time you divide at that age. And this tau bar here is the average frequency of reproductive events along the lineage. So that will depend on this G tilde. So you calculate lineage fitness. Then you need to figure out the entropy. And the entropy actually, the entropy is straightforward because it's just the entropy of the interval distribution. In other words, you have reproductive intervals where you rejuvenate, and you can shuffle these around, but you will not change the age distribution along, you will not change the age distribution along the lineage if you just reshuffle the reproductive intervals. So that's the neat point here from a point of view of actually doing anything analytical. You can write down this entropy directly. And then you have to maximize this. So you're doing a functional maximization over G tilde. And this is straightforward. So in fact, you obtain the result for the interval distribution. This is the optimal interval distribution in any of these models as a function of this reproductive function. You obtain from that, as we said, you can go back and forth between interval distributions and lineage age distributions. You obtain the lineage age distribution. And the Malthus equation will pop out as well. So you get back the Malthus equation as well. So going back to our original example, in this particular model, the reproductive function had this form. And you see that if I ask, what is the interval distribution? I'm going to take this kind of, this was Gaussian. So in our example, this B of X was Gaussian. You see here that the interval distribution, the frequency with which you go back to age zero along the lineage is going to be given by simply an exponential factor on this Gaussian, and therefore it's just a Gaussian with a shifted mean. The lineage age distribution is therefore going to be nothing but an error function in this case. Okay, so in this example you can compute things explicitly. Okay, so now I want to say what kind of insight you gain into evolution of population, for example, from using this lineage perspective. So one thing you can ask is, what's going to happen if you had a mutant which causes a change in the aging profile? Or for example, in the reproductive function, or for example, in the mortality, or in any aspect of the model. So will such a mutant be advantageous? And these types of mutants can change, they can alter aging profiles potentially in non-trivial ways. So you could increase the rate of mortality from a certain age onwards, or you could decrease it or change it in any way in an age-specific way. So for example, mutants which only have an effect at later ages. So that's the kind of question you might be interested in. And Hamilton actually obtained a result and answered this question back in the 60s, and he found that if your mutant slightly perturbs the mortality at the age X, that mutant is going to increase or decrease in the population with a certain rate. So this is the advantage, this is the selective advantage of this mutant. And that rate he calculated. So he calculated it for the classic aging model, and that's what it looks like. It's this nasty-looking expression. In the lineage perspective, we obtain the simpler looking result that the advantage of this kind of mutant is exactly given by the lineage age distribution at the age X. In other words, for classic aging, this quantity is exactly equal to this, but this result is more general. So in fact, it says that in all the models that are described in the way I've shown, the strength of selection acting at any age is exactly given by this lineage age distribution. So what that means is that this distribution is reporting back to us about the selective strength in that given population. So it does not depend. So in other words, we may not know all the parameters. We may not know all the different. We may not know the model. But in a large class of models, what we get back by just observing the lineage age distribution is the strength of selection. So in the final couple of moments, I want to just point out that this kind of lineage perspective is actually useful for understanding other problems. For example, what if instead of only having ages in the population, you now include phenotypes? So you have some phenotypic diversity in the population. And you might have, like in the experiments I was showing in the beginning, you might have the capacity of changing the environment. So you might have fluctuating environments as well. So what you have is what in evolutionary biology is called fluctuating selection. And the model is okay, we can generalize, but let's just look at something simple or set. Suppose you have a multitude of phenotypes and you have switching rates between these phenotypes. And so these are kind of internal to the organism. And different phenotypes grow better or worse in different environments. And so in this kind of model, you also have, you can see here, you also have some formulation which looks somewhat like it should look similar as well to this variational principle that we gave. So you can ask what's going to happen in fluctuating environments. And so I'm not going to go into much detail here, but I just want to point out that, for example, if you look at a lineage where you know the states of the cells at different times, it might look something like this. For example, if you have GFP markers for different states, and you can change the environment. And when you do that, what you'll see is that the lineages which you may expect to see a lineage with certain probabilities which depend on the internal switching rates of the lineage. But selection is acting in the population. And so the lineages which were in the right state at the right time, even by chance, are going to be amplified in the population. And you can understand that kind of amplification of histories or lineages. You can understand it by writing down the fitnesses of phenotypes along lineages and writing down fitness for history. And then you'll obtain a path integral formulation also at this level. And I'm not going into how you would then further make inferences from this, but it turns out that things like the variance of fitness over lineages are very generally reporting back on the strength of selection in fluctuating environments in these kind of models. And so I want to conclude by saying that this kind of path integral viewpoint, where you look at populations from a perspective of lineages, is able to give us some potentially very interesting information about the strength of selection. So for the case that I went through lots of detail on was when you have aging profiles and mutations which may change those aging profiles. In that case, the average over lineages, looking at the age distribution along lineages, reports to you on the strength of selection at any age. If you have something more complicated, like phenotypic structure, then things like the variances of fitness between lineages is going to report to you on how strongly selection is able to act in a given population. And you can actually use that to detect whether organisms are sensing their environment or whether they're randomly switching between states. And so the upshot of this is that if you just look at cell division statistics along lineages, that may be sufficient to measure many aspects of this theory. So we're now actively working to do that. And I wanted to thank my collaborators, Shura Grossberg and Yuichi Wakamoto. Thank you.
Ido. So perhaps you can help me reconcile your actual findings in bacteria with the primitive picture I always had in my mind, which I thought was the textbook picture, or maybe it was wrong, that cells, all cells have the same generation time, so they would all be born at, you know, length L, go to length 2L at time tau, and then divide. So I think the textbook picture is pretty deterministic about that. So can you tell me, is the actual thing one sees in experiment radically different, or sort of just a perturbation on that?
Well, I think it's definitely somewhat different. So for example, I showed these distributions of the cell cycle time. So those distributions have been measured by many people and many organisms going back a long, long time. So you can see very nice measurements actually from 80 years ago that are showing these distributions, and those distributions change as a function of conditions, and they appear to be pretty well fit by gamma distributions. I can give some maybe idea of why that's true, but no, it's by no means. And you have to also keep in mind that there's subpopulations. So that is the kind of dominant picture, is that there are these somewhat regular, let's say, gamma-distributed divisions. But then there are subpopulations which occur with rates, with tiny rates, which are extremely important in large populations but are not seen in many experiments, where you have cells which have extremely different distributions.
I don't know what to say. We do these experiments on a daily basis.
Sure.
And then we follow the cells for hundreds of generations and for millions of cells at the single cell level.
Right.
I was a bit confused by what is your definition of aging, really?
So the definition of aging would be that the rate of growth of cells depends on the age since, for example, in E. coli would be, you know, of course, the number of old poles, or however you wish to track the age, okay? Which we know there's intensive debates about. But that, in the models, is the definition.
So I see. So the definition of your definition of aging is based on the growth rate, the fitness.
Is based on the rate of cell division at that age, right?
Rate of
it's
cell
not,
division.
It's, yeah, exactly.
Okay, so, but, you know, when I talk to purists like Matt Masterson, they
say,
when I talk to,
okay.
So hardcore, you know, the biologists, they say the only definition they would accept is the death rate, the mortality rate, whether that changes as a function of time.
Uh-huh.
So what it showed.
Why is that? I'm not following.
I don't know.
Yeah,
okay. So I'm a physicist, okay? So when I take their definitions, uh-huh. So at least in E. coli, for old pulsars, the growth rate does not change for hundreds of generations, okay? In fact, if you look at the growth rate, you cannot predict whether a cell is going to die or not.
Right.
But if you actually measure the population sizes, the population decreases much faster than exponential fashion. In fact, it really follows the Gompertz law. So that's why I was very confused by, you know.
No, I think there's no real discrepancy. I mean, you keep in mind these models.
So you simply say it's model dependent.
So, of course.
So if you change the definition of aging.
Oh yeah. So for example, you know what I showed was Bellman-Harris model, which has no aging. So you can think of this as null hypothesis. And in so keep in mind here, there's a population. There's a whole population. It's not like in your experiments where you have a single cell that's just dividing and making offspring. Here you're looking in the population context. So then the question is, the cells, for example, in your experiment, which go for 100 cell divisions, those cells are essentially, even if there were no aging, those cells would never be seen in the population, right? Because those cells are 2 to the 100, 1/2 to the 100.
That's right.
Right? So what we're doing is we're asking, in a population context, what can we see aging or not?
Right.
And that's simply the
one thing I can tell you is that you measure the average growth rate of this old pulsar, and you compare it to the growth rate in the bulk measurement, in other words, whole population, we've done that.
Yes.
And they precisely agree with each other.
Right. No, I know this. I know this. So, no, it's very interesting, and I think there's...
Maybe we should talk, I
will talk to you. Sure.
Yeah, actually, I have a follow-up question, which is very related to what Sunjut. Do you introduce explicit deaths in this model? Is it just simply decreasing Malthusian parameter, like decreasing births, or deaths kind of is has to be introduced in this consideration explicitly and independently of births? So imagine that with some rate cells die.
Right.
So that they are not able to divide anymore. By death, I mean the inability for cell to divide. So
right,
they cannot
right.
Divide. So the question is, in this type of analysis, is it simply renormalization of B?
No, it comes in separately in L, what we called L here, which was the survival probability to Ajax.
Okay, right.
Yeah.
Am I right to understand that the whole model works in abundance of food? So there is no feedback when you just increase population and the population have problems because there is not enough food.
That's right. That's correct. These models are for continuously dividing cells.
Because otherwise you will have a strong nonlinear feedback and
that's right.
The whole thing will change.
The whole thing will change.
Okay.
That's correct.
Over here, Tom. Okay. The statistical mechanical analogy passed by me quite quickly. It's very lovely, this lineage entropy. But is there an analogy of temperature in the behavior of these systems generically? Would there be hot or cold populations where the fitness lineage won over the fitness entropy and so forth, and even phase transitions?
For the aging, we're not introducing any temperature for the aging case. For the case when I talked about phenotypes, there's a meaning to it. It's not even, it's in a sense a trick. You can use temperature as a trick there. But there's no notion of temperature in any of these cases.
Okay, thanks.
When you're following your lineages, when cells divide, how do you decide which one is the mother?
Oh, in real life, or in
experiment.
In experiment, okay. In there's some the bacteria that divide asymmetrically, and then it's obvious. And there's ones which are tricky, like E. coli, where it's completely non-obvious. But there's the following way to do it, which is when the cell grows and divides, suddenly in the middle of the cell there are two new poles. And then, if you are careful about it and you track carefully in your movies, you can associate an old pole and a new pole to every cell. And if you are extremely patient or if you have extremely good computer algorithms, you can track the number of old poles and how old is every pole in the movie.
And statistically, the probability of reproduction later or division later is different for the one that has the old pole?
This is highly under intense controversy and active investigation. So there's conflicting
reports of this. So there's no statistical. Okay.
Well, again, it depends on the experiment. Some experiments report that there is a strong effect, and others report there's absolutely no effect.
Yeah, so it's actually quite related. So if you don't have a system where you can observe whether it's asymmetric division or whether you have two competing lineages growing at different rates, have you tried to use your model to make predictions that would enable one to say, I can't see which is happening, but from the population statistics I can infer what must be happening?
Yeah, that's exactly what we'd like to do. And the systems where we're most actively trying to do that are ones where you actually have phenotypic changes. So less so on aging. I agree that you could probably do something similar on aging, but we started doing this with fluctuating environments to try to understand if the cells are sensing the environment or if they're just switching. And that kind of inference you can get from this lineage analysis.
Well, let's thank you again.